sports. Yes, I'm back. Still not 100%, but the voice is good enough to go, so here I am, something that has bit me really hard. Without further ado, because he's already been waiting a few minutes, we had a pre-scheduled interview with Governor Scott Walker, and then things got really interesting yesterday, and that's where we're going to start with comments that we'll have the governor respond to. We are joined now on the phone by Governor Scott Walker. Governor, good morning.
Good morning, Jerry. Good to be with you. Thanks for having me on.
Great having you. Of course, we're going to start with DNC Chair Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz in Wisconsin referred to your policies as you giving women, quote, the back of your hand, and Tea Party extremists such as yourself pulling women back by the hair. Obvious metaphors for domestic violence against women. I don't have to ask you what you think of them. We all know they're repugnant. Mary Burke's campaign has been very tepid in its response. Are you calling on her to repudiate those comments?
Absolutely. I think anyone should. If anyone made comments like that, I don't care if they're Democrat, Republican, anywhere else, any of us who worked, there are plenty of people, Republican and Democrat alike, who for years have worked with the victims of domestic violence, the victims of child abuse, and others out there, and to use language like that is just an affront and outrageous. And I think anyone should certainly call that out. And unfortunately, what we saw response-wise came from a spokesperson, and at best it was stupid, and I think it's a reflection. It's much like we saw the other day on much less serious an issue, but in a similar pattern, when Mary Burke, you know, met privately with the president to appease her base, but by the same token wouldn't be seen publicly with him because she was afraid of being in line with things like Obamacare. In this case, it's even worse. You've got someone where she doesn't want to undermine the outside groups that will be supporting her, particularly the unions, because they're big fans of the DNC chair. But at the same time, even she and her team understand just how outrageous these comments were.
Well, you called it an affront. Let's be clear here. She was trying to attack you. But this is an affront to the victims of domestic violence to compare what they've gone through with political policy.
Well, exactly. I mean, the idea that using language like that, which all of us know, anybody who's worked, I mean, we put in our last budget, we helped build a number of domestic violence shelters, one that's already open, another one that'll be breaking ground on. We just signed bipartisan legislation. It's like Andre Jacques, who you know is one of the authors, and others out there who've aggressively worked with a whole coalition of groups across the state who work with the victims of domestic violence. This is an issue that should bring people together to fight domestic violence in the state, regardless of party, regardless of background, regardless of ideological beliefs. And yet, here you've got someone who, I think, purposely, I mean, these were not just random thoughts. She repeated it. I mean, her comment was, she acknowledged how outrageous her words were and then reinforced them, actually put an explanation point on it figuratively. But I think this is a sign, you know, to your listeners and to others across, get ready, because this is the difference here. Was she just had the audacity to say out loud what many of these folks, many of our opponents, think in terms of how outrageous they are, not just on this language, but other areas. They've just done a pretty good job of keeping the protesters and the more wild elements of their opposition undercover, because they knew in the recall that scared a lot of people, and it should, because those are the kind of people who were certainly behind my opponent's campaign.
Colin Roth, writing at Right Wisconsin today, said this. First, he responds to Mary Burke's campaign response, and as you said, the statement says nothing. Scott Walker and his team cannot let this stand, and they need to understand that in no uncertain terms, they cannot depend on the news media to do the job for them. The media will be all too happy to move along. And here's how I would build on that. As you said, she understood how outrageous. This wasn't a gaffe. This wasn't a slip. In her universe, that's really how she sees conservative policies, and that's the extremism that voters need to understand.
Exactly right. This is, for all the talk you hear from Mary Burke's campaign, from all the talk you hear for her counterpart who's running for attorney general, this is the extremeness. This is just how extreme this is. There's no wonder. I mentioned yesterday I was talking about, on the same day this all happened, I pointed out, and it got covered a little bit, but not enough. We're going to keep pushing this as well. That for all Mary Burke's talk about education, the reality is she's a part of a school board in Madison that as of next school year will be the only one left in the state that hasn't used the Act 10 reforms. And that's bad enough, just because she said as a candidate she would negotiate, she wouldn't have put Act 10 through, she'd negotiate. she has a chance as a school board member to negotiate. She won't. Now, on top of that, a lot of people are surprised about this, but I was in Milwaukee yesterday morning before I went to Madison, and we pointed out that the African-American graduation rate is actually worse in the city of Madison, where she's on the school board, than it is in Milwaukee. That surprised even people in Milwaukee out there. It's for no other reason, not just to save property tax dollars for the taxpayers, but to use that money to try and deal with that disparity between African-American students and all the other students within that school district. She should be responsible and the others in that school. But I think it's clear in Madison, it's because they are beholden to the far left, the big government union bosses out there, the teachers union. And as a candidate, it seems increasingly clear that when we ask putting $1.3 billion into the Greater Wisconsin Committee, that this, again, is an example of where, you know, they're trying to look reasonable, they're trying to look middle-of-the-road mainstream, but the bottom line is it all too often appears as though people like our opponent are beholden to the teachers' union and to the other big government unions out there, and we know that's where we'll be headed in the future. Bigger property taxes, bigger spending, bigger benefits if we don't wake up and realize what's at stake in this election.
Talking with Governor Scott Walker, and you used that opportunity to build up, to really separate yourself from your opponent on school vouchers, and that you support the expansion, as you know I do, the expansion of the school voucher program. And that's probably as critical a difference in this campaign as any.
Well, there's no doubt about it. I mean, think about it. I mentioned the African-American graduation rate. It's not only worse in Madison, it's actually worse in Green Bay. Now, Green Bay's got some great schools. I point out before, they've got some high-performing schools. But unfortunately, for some of the kids, including a significant number of African-American kids and other districts outside of Milwaukee, their graduation rates are worse. We want to make sure that we replicate success in successful schools across the state. Many of those are public schools, and many of those public schools are schools that are doing better now because of our Act 10 reforms, because we've gotten rid of seniority. We allow schools to hire and fire based on merit, to pay based on performance, to put the best and the brightest in the schools. Many of our school districts across the state are doing much, much better because of our reforms. But there are also some schools out there that are challenged, and where they are challenged in particular, but anywhere in the state, we should be giving families the choice, the option to say, if my son or daughter is going to a school that's not right for them, and there's a charter or there's a private school nearby that can better meet the needs of my son or daughter to get a great education, we should be giving families that choice. The school I was at yesterday reading in Milwaukee, the heart of the city of Milwaukee and one of the poorest areas, not just in Milwaukee, but in the entire state of Wisconsin, more than 80% of the kids are African-American, more than 80% are low income, and 96% of those kids graduate from high school. That's a tremendous opportunity we should be letting people have all across the state.
Talking with Governor Scott Walker, some conservatives have said they'd like to see a more definitive second-term agenda from you. Do you think you've been specific enough about what a second term would look like, what the goals would be, and if you have, what are they?
We haven't up until now, and part of the reason why is traditionally, as you know, and I would imagine most of your listeners do, traditionally the big ideas start to roll up from Labor Day on, because for a lot of folks, families out on vacations, people aren't paying as close attention to a campaign during the summer. It's really been traditionally get back to post-Labor Day and you start laying things out. Yesterday I talked about wanting to further expand and open the door for further expansion of school choice. Already I've talked about our plans for lowering property taxes 4 years from now from where they will be this December, which will mean they'll be even lower than they were when I started, because in December of 14, they'll be lower than they were in 10. I want them even lower 4 years from now in December of 2018. I've already talked about continuing to freeze on UW tuition. So whether it's UW Green Bay or UW Stout or UW Madison or anywhere else across the state, I want to continue to have a tuition freeze. But we'll also be talking about in the coming weeks about our jobs plan, overall plans for taxes and tax reform, entitlement reform, and more on education reform. We've got a whole series of things, and they'll be coming out throughout the next few weeks and in September. I think people will be pleased. Not only will Republicans in the base be pleased, I think everyday hardworking citizens are going to be pleased with our agenda, because we want more people to live the American dream. You know, the first term, the state inherited a pretty big problem. You know, that Jim Doyle and Mary Burke's policies had dug us into a pretty big hole. We got to see. It's a lot easier to dig a hole than it is to get out of it. We got out of that hole. We got our fiscal health back in order. We got the economy back on the right track again. But there's a lot more we want to do to not only help the private sector create more jobs, but also to make sure that those jobs aren't just about more jobs. They're about better pay, because one of the things I heard from a lot of people 4 years ago when I was running was not only worries about work, but worries that they had taken a pay cut just to keep employed. A lot of folks, 5, 10, 15% said, we'll take a pay cut in order to not have big layoffs at the company. Well, people are getting out of that recession. They're getting some of that payback, but we need to keep growing even further if we want to have healthy families and healthy communities across the state. So we want to help employers. We understand instead of a minimum wage going up, the better alternative is to help people learn more to earn more. And so we want to do more to help people with ongoing education, with technical colleges, with apprenticeships, and other things that will empower people to get more skills and thus make them more valuable to their employers so they can go out and earn more in the future.
You recently said right-to-work legislation is not on your agenda. I've pressed several Republican lawmakers on this, whether they'd like to see it in 2015. They all generally said yes, but wouldn't commit to spearheading it, which you did as a legislator. Can you see, Governor, where Republicans are giving the impression they support the concept but are almost afraid of what the reaction would be to move on this legislation?
Well, I think in this case, I mean, I get the philosophical argument you point out, my involvement in the past. On this one, though, I just think for the big things that we want to do, I want to dramatically lower the income tax burden. I want to do it in a way that doesn't raise the overall sales tax. I want to continue to drive down property tax. I want to continue entitlement reforms. I want to expand school choice. I want to continue to improve our schools and give flexibility. There's a lot of really big things I'd like to do over the next 4 years as your governor. In my sense with this is just practically having learned from what we experienced in the past, a big issue like that could be a huge distraction from, I think, a whole array of really important reforms we need to act on. Not to mention, we effectively have, for the vast majority of formerly unionized employees out there, we effectively have right to work for public employees. That's over 300,000 people in this state who are state or public level employees who are part of, many of whom are part of unions. We've given them that choice already. And for those remaining, yeah, they're not all perfect, but a lot of the skilled trade unions are actually pretty good allies of us in terms of economic development, of working with their employers, of being good partners. And, you know, you'd hate to create a battle over that when these are the very people who are helping us help the private sector get back to work.
So you still support it philosophically, but you don't want to fight the fight. See, that's what some people are saying, or that's the way it comes out sounding, Governor.
Well, in the end, it you know, people say, oh, he's unintimidated. It tells me he's unintimidated. No, I we've got a full litany of things we need to do. We found that many of the private sector unions, not all, you know, there's some out there, SEIU, that is involved in the private sector, has been consistently at a level very much like public employees. But many of the other skilled trades have actually been great partners, not just with us and the government, but with their employers. And I hear employers say, hey, I get why you took on the public sector employees. I get why you stood on behalf of the taxpayers. But this is a battle that they're not interested in having. And it's certainly not something we're going to be pushing over the next 4 years. And I would imagine, even though there's some lawmakers who'd like to do this, in the end, we've had a pretty good partnership between the legislature and I over the last 4 years to push really big reforms forward. We're going to have a full slate. I don't think anyone should be disappointed. When you think about what we've accomplished, you compare us to any other state in the country over the last 4 years, not just the reforms. Be afraid, it wasn't just about pensions and health care benefits. We got rid of seniority. We got rid of tenure. We put in place performance measures. We got rid of the abuses of overtime. We've done all these things at the state and local level. We cut taxes by $2 billion. We passed voter ID. We passed right to carry. We passed concealed carry. We passed Castle Doctrine. You look at the hit list of good, yeah, common sense conservative ideas out there. We have done it, and we're going to lay out in the next few weeks a very aggressive agenda of, again, common sense conservative-minded ideas that not only help us win the election, I think they'll help us continue the Wisconsin comeback for the next 4 years.
Final question for Governor Scott Walker. Conservative pundits, and that includes me, have discussed a complacency that there appears to be among conservative voters when it comes to your governor's race. You and I have even talked about this. Do you think, yeah, that's being overstated? And if not, how do you combat it?
Well, I don't. I think it is absolutely accurate. It is something I've tried to forewarn for the past year going around events, grassroots events around the state of Wisconsin, that then I felt complacency was going to be a big part of this race, that many, many of the people in this state who were involved in 4 years ago and again in the recall, it's a combination of fatigue and complacency. Many folks have just, you know, they gave it their all, two elections in a row, and it's almost like people are wiped out, although I get a sense in the last few weeks with these polls that people are kind of waking up and realizing, hey, the left is not backing off. They are not in any way feeling complacent. They are pumped up and motivated, unlike the rest of the country. But then the other part of complacency is I hear every day, not activists, but everyday voters say, you won the recall. You won with more votes than you did the first time. You got a great agenda. You got great results. People are going to see it and understand it, and particularly in parts of the state, the Fox Valley, Green Bay, the suburbs of Milwaukee, where people tend to hear their neighbors saying the same thing. And I tell them, yeah, but in Milwaukee and Madison, particularly in Madison, there are people who are, every one of them on that block are going to go out to vote against me. We got to make sure that people aren't complacent in saying if there's 8 or 9 people on your block out of 10 that are supporters, but only 5 or 6 vote, that means a couple of those votes that could have come out of that area are going to be conceded to Madison. People need to understand that. They also need to understand that in the recall, part of that margin of victory, not the whole base, but the margin, was driven by people who on principle voted against a recall. They're not necessarily supporters of ours. We're not writing them off. We're going to make a principled argument to them, but that's why it is much closer. We've said for a year any credible Democrat would have about 47-48% of the vote. Didn't matter if it was Mary Burke, Tom Barrett, Ron Kind, Peter Barker. Any credible Democrat in this state starts out with about that many votes. We got to work that much harder to make up the difference.
All right, as always, Governor Scott Walker, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Jerry. Bye.
Yep. I found very interesting his comments concerning Debbie Wasserman Schultz comments and Mary Burke's campaign response to them. We're going to double back on that after 9:06. State Senator Leah Vukmir will be joining us, and we'll talk about that. And I agree with Colin Roth from Wright, Wisconsin. The Walker campaign and Republicans in general can't let this go. This has gotten national play. Even some Democrats privately are wincing at what Debbie Wasserman Schultz said. We also have some insight. She was at an event in Wausau yesterday, and she literally ran from a reporter on this issue. We're going to get to that as well. That's Debbie Wasserman Schultz did. This is one of those moments, as Roth writes, and I agree, that Republicans need to seize, which is why we'll spend a little more time on it before moving on to other things after 9. It's 8:57.